Naloxone is the generic version of Narcan, among other brand names. It's a fast-acting drug used to treat opioid overdoses. We've seen a dramatic increase in opioid abuse and death in recent years. There is a movement to make naloxone nasal spray available without a prescription. Joining us this morning are two members of the Oregon Pain Guidance, Sarah Smith, a controlled substance nurse at La Clinica, and Mark Cantor, a registered clinical pharmacist with All Care Health. Welcome to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, let's talk a little bit about this opioid addiction. It seems to have really escalated in recent years. Mark, you have a few statistics on that?
Yeah, nationwide, the amount of people who have died as a result of opioid deaths has really skyrocketed. So continuing its climb over the past few years, more than 72,000 people died in the United States last year, or excuse me, 2017, as a result of the opioid misuse. So that's really more people than soldiers that died during the entire Vietnam War. There's a staggering number of people who we lost.
Yes, sir.
So that's up 12% over the previous year. Even though we've made a lot of strides in reducing prescribed opioids, continues to go up. It was the highest number of people ever in the United States, so it's the worst drug epidemic ever, higher than the number of people who died of HIV/AIDS during the height of that problem.
And how are we seeing the problem here in our region? Is it comparable to the rest of the nation? Are we seeing an escalation as well?
We're seeing an increase in the number of deaths that are caused by illicit opioids, which is kind of the problem that's bedeviling the rest of the country. I think we've kind of seen, they say the first wave of opioid problem was the prescribed opioids. The next wave was heroin use, and the wave we have now, the third wave, is a rise in illicit opioids, which includes fentanyl and carfentanil. So as those permeate the market, you could say, then because people die so quickly, like within 2 minutes with fentanyl is what I've heard, and that's another reason why we need naloxone everywhere so that it's available if someone overdoses.
Mm-hmm. You can join our conversation this morning by calling 800-838-3760 or send us an email at jx@jeffnet.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at Jeff Exchange. Tell us a little bit about the Oregon Pain Guidance and what your goals and objectives are.
Well, Oregon Pain Guidance has been, we founded a number of years ago to really look at inappropriate opioid prescribing, and it has really branched out to look at other treatment modalities for controlling chronic pain, looking at other substances besides simply opioids, and looking at some of the underlying causes of opioid addiction and best practices about managing chronic pain. As Sarah said, having naloxone is something that we feel is vital to have available because of the speed at which some of the fentanyl and other synthetic analogs cause a person to die. And that's what really prompted our desire to have naloxone so readily available.
You know, I kind of left off the answer to your question about what's going on locally. So we've had 19 deaths from illicit opioids in the Jackson County area so far this year. Last year, all year long, we lost 6 people. In 2016, we lost 4. So already this year, we've lost 3 times as many people as last year, and we aren't finished. In spring of this year, we had 10 overdose deaths in less than 2 months in our area. Eugene, Springfield, the weekend of September 22nd, there were, in a 3-day period, there were 21 overdose deaths. They had 4 heroin overdose deaths in a 6-hour period. People were rescued by naloxone.
How hard is naloxone to get? I'm assuming it's why you're doing the petition.
Right. So across the states, across the nation, various states have implemented different ways to allow people to get access to naloxone. Some states have a collaborative practice agreement or a standing order from a physician. Oregon passed a law that gave prescriptive authority to pharmacists. So anyone can go talk to their pharmacist and ask them for a prescription. Pharmacists can prescribe naloxone to that person. So that's been a really good way of getting the naloxone. And we've seen increases in naloxone prescribing from physicians, but also from pharmacists. And it's starting to get out there, but unfortunately, it's not sufficient. And what's happening is that because of the nature of addiction, there's still a lot of stigma attached to that. And so people who are maybe actively using illicit substances may not want to have that discussion, or if they have a family member who is using, it makes it challenging to go talk to a pharmacist because there's that stigma attached to it. So we feel that making naloxone available without a prescription would make that barrier much less of an issue.
I think one of the pieces of evidence for that is we have a local organization, Max's Mission, which is a community-based organization. The Pinsky family founded it after they lost their son, Max, about 6 years ago to a heroin overdose. So they have worked hard to get hundreds and hundreds of doses into our community. You don't necessarily hear what good that did, but on International Overdose Awareness Day on August 31st, we distributed about 125 doses of naloxone, mostly the Narcan nasal spray, but also the vials that can be used for intramuscular injection. And two people called in within a couple of weeks to say they'd saved somebody with that.
Wow.
So, and then nationally, there's numbers that CDC gathered that show how many people have been trained, 100 and some thousand people, lay people. It's so easy to use, which is part of this petition, that lay people can easily be trained in under 10 minutes, mm-hmm. and they've saved tens of thousands of lives.
Yeah. I was going to ask about that. It's a nasal spray, right? Is
correct.
It just like any other nasal spray?
They come in a single dose administration. So as Sarah said, it is pretty easy for a layperson to operate the nasal spray. And to piggyback onto the use of Max's Mission and the naloxone awareness, I think if you look at the state of Oregon data, you will see that looking at the amount of naloxone that was used prior to emergency medical services arriving on scene, Jackson County, Multnomah County are the two counties in the state where naloxone is administered before EMS arrives versus the other areas of the state where EMS arrives and then uses the naloxone. So I think that really highlights the need to have more naloxone in the community. But in terms of making it an over-the-counter agent, the FDA has set a few criteria aside for that. One is that the benefit outweighs the risk, that the potential for misuses or abuse is very low, that the consumer can use them for self-diagnosed conditions, and that they can be adequately labeled, and that health practitioners are not needed. So naloxone really meets all of those criteria. As Sarah said, it's very easy for somebody who's either trained in a very short period of time or even somebody who's not trained. When they've looked at the differences between trained people and untrained people, they found similar rates of outcomes. So very easy and intuitive for somebody to use the naloxone nasal spray. There's also different applications that can be used on your smartphone that show you either how to step-by-step how to use the naloxone mm-hmm. nasal spray, how to recognize an overdose. So really a lot of the requirement for somebody to have to be trained used to be necessary in the state of Oregon, and with legislative changes, that's no longer a requirement. So again, trying to remove as many barriers as possible. And I think that we think that having this available without a prescription is the right thing to do.
I'm not putting a price on saving a life, but how affordable is it, at least at present? And I'm assuming that over the long haul, it would probably come down in price like many other things have.
Yeah, currently for the Narcan product, I think it ranges in price from $85 to $90 upwards to about $125.
$150 is the norm, mm-hmm. yeah.
Depending on which pharmacy you go to and if you have any insurance. A lot of insurances cover it at no cost, certainly with Medicaid that's available at no charge. But the goal, again, is to have maybe with over-the-counter status, that would increase the potential for market. Like the over-the-counter nasal steroids that we saw a few years ago that used to be by prescription and now are available, things like Flonase or Nasacort, the prices dropped significantly. So we're hoping that having an over-the-counter product would also reduce the pricing, should hopefully make it to where more and more companies and employers and universities would be able to have naloxone in a first aid kit, that it would just become part of, say, like stand right next to a AED or automatic defibrillator machine.
We're talking this morning about naloxone and making it available over the counter for purchase to help in trying to prevent opioid deaths. You can join our conversation by calling 800-838-3760 or send us an email at jx@jeffnet.org. Tell us a little bit about the petition to the FDA. What is the process on that? How does that work?
Yeah, that's an interesting interesting process. So as the FDA has created a citizens petition process where anyone can ask the FDA to make a change. And so we looked at what was the requirements. So we filled out the form and submitted that. And that's available for anyone to view at the FDA website. It's currently in a comment phase that should close, I believe, right around March of next year. Typically, when the citizens petition process is utilized, it's a manufacturer of a medication that would petition the government. Even though it says a citizen petition, it's often pharma or another law firm on behalf of a pharmaceutical company. And we are not tied to any pharmaceutical companies. We don't support or endorse any one particular company or receive any funding from pharma. But we feel that this is such an important product to get into the hands of the people who are at risk that this is the best thing to have at this time.
Are there any disadvantages to using this particular nasal spray? Are there any side effects or is there addiction issues? It's really pretty safe then.
It is. Naloxone is a drug that binds to the opioid receptors in the body, but it does not have any intrinsic or action of its own. So when it gets into the system, it displaces or moves off the opioid from the receptors, particularly in the brain where it's causing the respiratory depression. And so it allows the body to start breathing and bring about a return of consciousness. So if you don't have the opioids on board, you're not going to see any effect from the medication.
One of the important aspects of that is that naloxone does not last as long as the drug that's causing the overdose. So that's one reason why it's critical that we call 911 immediately when we see that there's a problem, because we don't know what the person has on board. We don't know if they have compromising health conditions. Mm-hmm. And I think related to your question is sometimes it comes up like, well, aren't people just going to use more? And honestly, if you had to go through the kind of withdrawal that you would go through with naloxone, you would probably see that that's very unlikely. The person would have lost the last dollar that they probably had. And there's no evidence. It's been studied, and I can give somebody references. But it doesn't cause the euphoria. It causes you to get violently ill. But the good part about getting ill at that point is that you start breathing. So the rest of it's collateral.
Mm-hmm. Breathing is always good. Isn't
breathing it? Is good.
And with the nasal spray, it does have a little bit more of a delayed onset as opposed to if you've seen in film or TV where somebody gets a shot and they come jumping up.
Right.
There's a little bit of a delay or slower onset. So it's not quite as drastic.
You know, that's important. Brett Johnson, who's deputy chief of Medford Police, they've used naloxone 51 times since they started carrying it in January of 2015. And one time I asked him, like, do you have people like kind of popping up angry? He said, we haven't had that happen one time. Hmm. And so that's encouraging.
Mm-hmm. What kind of alternatives are there for once you're off the opioids and people who are suffering from chronic pain, what kind of alternatives are out there?
Well, there's a couple of things that come to mind. One of them is if a person has, in fact, developed an opioid use disorder, that is a treatable health condition. And the standard of care for that would be what's called medication-assisted treatment. Buprenorphine is available. A provider has to get a certain type of training for that. But it can be done in primary care, so someone doesn't have to go to a methadone clinic if, as long as they're stable enough for primary care. So to me, in primary care, we help create this problem on a big scale, so it would be appropriate to help people, and hopefully they have that kind of bond with their primary care provider to do that. So the other thing, I mean, getting an appropriate diagnosis and looking at what are the effective treatments for that. And the state, I think Mark should comment on this, but the health evaluation review committee, the HERC, mm-hmm. Takes a look at all these various conditions that are diagnosed down to the fine points. And what does evidence show is effective for those conditions?
So. Yeah, and unfortunately, most of the studies that have been done on opioids over the past 20, 30 years have been very short-term in nature, looking at very specific diseases. And so difficult to really extrapolate out how that affects somebody with chronic pain. There was a study that was done last year at the VA, and they looked at patients who had osteoarthritis. And after a year of being on opioids or people who were not on opioids but on other treatments, they found that patients who were on opioids actually had worse pain and worse mm-hmm. outcomes after that year period. So there's more and more evidence now that's showing that opioids are not really the appropriate treatment for non-cancer chronic pain. There is a lot of movement around increasing access to medication-assisted treatment. And I think that's really going to be the next phase. Hopefully that if somebody were to have an overdose, whether it's from a prescription drug or from an illicit substance like heroin, that they would then be able to be revived and then taken for evaluation through like one of the hospitals, and then hopefully offered treatment right there at the hospital so that they can start buprenorphine, start getting into the clinics where they can have some counseling or some additional treatment to go along with that and provide the help that they need to stay healthy.
I've read some people have remarked online that they've taken opioids for years and it's given them their life back. These are folks who are functioning. They have jobs. Do we know what percentage of the population tolerate opioids well and it doesn't become a real addiction issue? Somebody who truly has chronic pain problems.
Well, you know, the United States has been using 80% of the world's opioids for a while, and so I think it's hard to tease out who has got which benefit. However, I really like what you said about they're fully functional, they have jobs, they probably have a good family life, and so on. That I don't think that's the majority of people that we see on chronic opioids, but those are the things that we really need to be looking at, is what is the person's quality of life, their function, their enjoyment. And the old pain scales where you just give people enough opioids so that they say they don't have pain is really hopefully behind us.
Mm-hmm. And on top of that, so even if somebody was established on a higher dose of opioids for a long period of time, their risk of overdose does not really diminish. And so they may mm-hmm. still have their function, but it could take just one or two things, maybe a prolonged illness or an extra alcoholic beverage, or perhaps maybe they take an extra tablet once a day, and that can really increase their mortality or the risk of death. Yeah. So having naloxone, even for those patients, really can be a lifesaver. There's been a number of reported cases where, say, the husband and wife were taking similar medications, but their doses were different, and then when they get those two mixed up, then there's been fatalities. So I think it's really critical that even in those circumstances that they have naloxone available. Certainly diversion is a reality with these kinds of medications. So even if somebody were on chronic pain, established on their medication without really any problems, it's not uncommon that either somebody they know, relative, or even somebody who breaks into their house could take their medication and abuse it. Especially younger people are maybe more at risk for that, but it does occur at people of all ages. So having naloxone there is really akin to having a fire extinguisher in your home.
Our guests this morning have been Sarah Smith, a controlled substance and abuse case manager from La Clinica, and Mark Cantor, a clinical pharmacist from All Care Health. Thank you so much with this information on naloxone. What's that address again for the petition online?
Well, you can go to the FDA website, and search it that way. I think the best way to get more information about naloxone would be to visit staysafeoregon.org. And there's a lot of great information there about naloxone, how to get it, and then also about how to get medication-assisted treatment.